I'm very thankful that we are meeting together and having this conversation, which I think is very, very, very important, because this is kind of this this meeting of, or let's say this is the praxis that we all want to be. And me as a person, as a Kashmiri first and an anthropologist second, I really cherish these conversations because they bring home something very important, which is how to translate whatever it is that we are thinking theoretically with the academic merit and try to think of all of those things in terms of how to think about Kashmir very creatively. And what I think is what Shubh has done for me, she has laid down the foundation of some parts of what is my presentation as well. Although 10 minutes is a short time, but I'll try to, what I have is questions basically. So my presentation or this little intervention is titled Seeking Ideal of Law and Democracy, Gendered Human Rights Practices and Enforced Disappearances. So basically my informants or my people that I work with are the APDP women and are the kin and the other HR practitioners in Kashmir. So what I want to bring home is some questions. It's we are all aware of what's happening in Kashmir, and we are all aware of this dense and intense militarization. We are all aware of what is happening and the abuses and the statistical details. And I just want to backtrack a little bit and sort of take you to this little sort of scenario where we are thinking about the APDP, which is the Association of Parents of Disappeared Persons, which is started by Parveena Ahangar, that you've already talked about. So thinking about her struggle, thinking about what she's doing on ground, it's been well documented. Even a small Google search on human rights activists in Kashmir will just lead you to this plethora of lists where it's nothing but APDP pictures of women, which kind of brings home this fact to me that this is a very successful movement. But then, what's the end result? 25 years, no disappearance has been proven. Nothing is being, there's yield is, except for the awareness, which is great in itself, not much has been procured by these women, despite their long struggle. So what I want to kind of, these are the questions that I want to throw on the table. So what is it, what that makes these ideals of law and democracy, these women, when they are starting their struggle, they're actually seeking law as an ideal of justice. But then you have the state, which is enforcing law as an ideal of order. So there's this contrast between which they are working. And you see what when you have security advisors, you have the military personnel or the commanders or whoever, whatever their names are, they are your security advisors, and you have OPSPA in place, the Armed Forces Special Powers Act. And the fact that most of these women do not even have FIRs, which is the first information report that you lodge a complaint with the police that someone has been disappeared. They don't even have those. Although Shubh did talk about what they are doing, the meticulous documentation, what ABDP is doing currently, I work with APDP, Shubh works with APDP, and we know how great a struggle that is even to procure those documents. For the FIR, what these women are doing, there is a roundabout way that many of the FIRs are being procured, and that is they go to the State Human Rights Commission, they lodge their complaint there, and then it is treated as somewhat of an FIR. So these are the things that they are doing. So the reason I'm kind of bringing this vignette up is, number one, we have to think about why is the struggle gendered? Why is APDP so gendered? What does it tell us about the scenario in Kashmir? What does it tell us about the non-hegemonic masculinities that have been created, these layers of societal disorder that have been created? This is a conservative, definitely a very progressive society where women are getting educated, where women have always been part of, somewhat part of the mainstream, but at the same time, what we're looking at is a human rights movement which is incredibly gendered. And so my question, or part of my work also, is where are the men? And And we know where the men are. They are disappeared. So that's a huge contrast here. And that's something that academia or academic scholars who are here need to think about. And that also brings to fore what actually this militarization is doing to the society, because there are other little micropolitical situations that occur. And the other thing that I want to talk about is, how is human rights activism even possible? And what is human rights activism when we look at APDP? Is this activism really all practitioners or academics or researchers, whoever is going to Kashmir, be it native or non-natives, Shubh works there, I work there, I belong to Kashmir. And what we are trying to do is document. And that is the level of our success. And no doubt it's going to account, it's going to be something at some point. But I kind of think that this is the right moment when we have to start thinking about how is human rights possible? Especially when you have the SHRC, which can only recommend and it cannot penalize, it cannot implement. And you have the OFSPA, and till date, no sanctions have been granted. Then you have India, which has signed the International Convention Against Enforced Disappearances in February of 2007, which makes it obligated to not commit such crimes, but that it has not ratified the convention. So it's not codified the crime. And then you have all of these all of the cases, and now we also have the fact that we are reactivating a lot of cases. But where are we taking them? What's the end result? That is something that we need to box, and that is something that we need to think about, because it's a really important at some post-conflict situation, but I do not consider Kashmir to be post-conflict. I still think that it's a very, very active conflict that is ongoing, and this is a moment when there are a lot of Kashmiris who are like me, who are thinking about our own situation, and not just out of passion, but very objectively as well. What do you do when you have such a backup with habeas corpus? You have these cases that are lagging, and even Parveena, in a way, has given up her case. Her case is very symbolic of what has happened to this human rights struggle. You talk to her, and she will tell you that the case is just lingering. She doesn't know what to do with it anymore. She has a stack of files, and that's what every other woman is doing, or every other family is doing. They're getting these stacks of papers, which has become very symbolic of what you are seeking in Kashmir, which is a dead end at the moment. And I think what becomes very important, as we are documenting, as we are thinking, and as we are even at some level glamorizing these situations of human rights practices through women and thinking that this is a very gendered, very important movement, but at the same time we have to think that they are working within this very iron cage of legal instrumentalism, and that is every aspect of their struggle. It's not just one aspect. And that makes it very moot at some point. And that's my frustration. How do you take it further? How do you talk to a democracy? How do you talk to this all-imposing democracy, a procedural, electoral, whatever you want to call it? How do you think about it in a very substantive way and think that these people will be successful and we will be able to aid them and we will be able to aid ourselves to get to that point where we are talking about these disappearances as cases that are solved? There is a great danger when we talk to the members in APDP, when they talk about the mass graves, when they talk about the unidentified graves, there's this huge fear that if we are not cognizant of the fact that, we have to be very cognizant of the fact that we do not have human rights laws or infrastructures in place that are going to save the APDP movement. Many times the fear is that if we are really looking at mass graves and unidentified graves, we are actually forgetting the disappeared. And what is the, I mean, in all this, in this crucible, what you see is that Parveena, especially the group that works with Parveena, most of them know their perpetrators. They're like, we don't want to do anything else. We just want to get these people to justice, but where are the sanctions? how do you travel that? How do you kind of like traverse that part? How do you think about that constraint, that the legal instrumentalization, or whatever you want to call it, this iron cage of ideal of law as order? How do you get over it? How do you think around it? And I think that as people who are in academia, as people who want to be practitioners at some point, who want to make use of this knowledge that we are gaining in academia and trying to think about all of these things, I think it's a responsibility. And that's why I think this is a very, very important conversation we're having here, to just infuse some life into what we're thinking, which has academic merit, try to think around these constraints. And these are a few questions, because I don't want to be preaching to the choir. I know most of your work, and I know all of us are more or less on the same page. But these are the questions that we really have to start thinking about. Like, how do you work within these constraints and even think about these old movements as human rights movements? Because then you have a lot of other constraints at the international level, where you have to have passed your regional and local organizations and infrastructures till you get to the United Nations level. No doubt, Parveena's APDP has got this, they have got this funding, and they are doing this documentation, and God knows how many problems that they are facing, and with how much challenge and how much vigor they're pursuing it, and they want to get it done. And they are also receiving a lot of help from all these good-hearted volunteers. But at the same time, where does it get us? What are we doing? How do we traverse this really very binding constraint when you're working within the ideals of democracy, which you do not see? It's a kind of a different animal that we're dealing with here. We are deeply militarized, but then you are living this facade of procedural democracy as well. So these are a few questions that I had. I did not have a formal presentation, because knowing this is a workshop, I thought I'd just go off, and I haven't had my coffee yet, so.
Thank you, Anthony.